Reader's notes. So, I recorded this podfic a full 24 hours ago, and immediately after recording it, I made some kind of verbally flaily reader's notes, and they were very enthusiastic. And then I woke up for work this morning, and I was still thinking about this story and how much it means to me, and I wrote some notes down so I could record some slightly more coherent reader's notes. So, we will see if this is actually any better, depending on which version I end up liking more, I guess. I just want to say, to start this off, I owe an incredible thank you to Countess of Biscuit. I was so incredibly spoiled for Star Wars Rare Pair Exchange this year. I got three things, and they all just hit me in the heart in ways that I wasn't expecting, and everything about all of the things that I got gave me so much joy. But this particular story, I had to keep safety tabbing away because it was too much good feeling all at once, and I couldn't process it. So I'd safety tab away and give it a minute for the joy to settle and simmer down a little, and then I'd come back and read like two paragraphs, and then I'd yell, "It's like it was written for me!" And my roommate would say something like, "Yes, because it was." And we did that for a couple times in a row. It took me like 3 days to get through this story originally because it was just too much good to process all at once, and it just found this perfect niche of all the things I wanted and didn't know I wanted and didn't know I wanted quite like that in a way that made me incredibly overjoyed. It just hit all of the buttons, and one of the very, very, very good for me buttons was the use of the Resonare in this story. The Resonare are the six actions for people who are not as well, I don't want to say well versed, people who don't spend quite as much time doing the deep dive of Mando culture as I have spent. And they were something that I asked for in all caps on my Rare Pair Exchange letter. But the six actions are: a Mandalorian must wear armor, a Mandalorian must speak Mandoa, a Mandalorian must defend themselves and their family, a Mandalorian must contribute to the overall well-being of the clan, a Mandalorian must raise their children as Mandalorians, and a Mandalorian must heed the Mandalore's call and rally to their cause. And if you can tick off those six things, no matter what planet you're from, no matter what species you are, no matter where you were born or who you, like, that, if you follow these six rules, you can call yourself a Mandalorian in Mando culture of the extended universe, or which is, you know what, that was the other thing I really loved about this, that it was like a really good blend of EU stuff that I loved and Legend stuff that I loved and a little bit of Disney stuff, and I mostly sort of, you know, choose your own canon when it comes to Star Wars. But if you follow the Resonare, if you meet these six tenets, you're a Mandalorian. If you don't, you're Darmanda, which is what Bo-Katan calls Boba before she really meets him. You are not a Mandalorian. And you're ignorant of your heritage, and you're not able to become, like, the best version of yourself. And then throughout this story, okay, so there's a little rhyme, too, that goes with it, just so that I can have, like, my moment of Resonare feelings. Education and armor, self-defense, our tribe, our language and our leader, all help us survive. And in Mandoa, it goes like this. Bajrabal Beskargam, Aranov Alith, Mandoa Bal Mandalore, and Vinkunyam Mi. And that's the bit that Boba recites as he's going down on Bo-Katan, and it was so fucking good for me, which says something about me, I guess. We're not going to examine that too deeply. We will come back to that later. but I love the idea of Mandalore as a culture of adoption and Mandalorian, like the Mandalorian Empire, kind of forcibly adopting some planets into their empire. But you know what? That's fine. The Romans did it too, and it worked out great for them. This idea of a culture of adoption, if you follow the rules, it's not even like they're hard rules. If you just abide by these tenets, you're a Mandalorian. Doesn't matter what your income is, doesn't matter what your political leanings are, it doesn't matter what your species is, it doesn't... You're adopting people into your rules, and it just... The guiding principles of the Res Ulnare are my jam. And then Countess of Biscuit did something actually really incredible with the Res Ulnare throughout this fic that I loved a lot, because... Like, that was sort of the capstone, your conclusion sentence was the bit where he goes down on her. But we start with, she gives him back his armor. She cleans it up. Education, the part where Bo is sort of quizzing Boba a little bit on what's your father's sigil like? What do you know about, like, our culture and our people as we stand now? Self-defense goes right back to she gave him, like, his ability to protect himself with the blaster that she gives him in the very, very interest. I don't know what that word means. The very, very beginning when he's still on bed rest. She also talks to Boba about how his dad raised him. Like, his dad didn't quite raise him as strictly Mandalorian as, like, Boba might have been. But Jango taught Boba, these are our stories, these are our myths, these are our heritage. So he's got that, and we go over it. And then there's that one line about... Bo and Boba are going back and forth, and she's like, have you ever raised arms for anyone but yourself? And, like, that's kind of the last one where, that up to that point, Boba Fett has always been a bit his own, not anyone else's. And that's one of the things that the Res Ulnare, you have to take into account, is if the Mandalore calls you, you do what they say. Anyway, so I just liked this idea of you sort of see Bo almost... I might be forcing it. It probably wasn't an intentional thing on the author's part, but you see Bo, like, going through the Res Ulnare with Boba as he recuperates, and then you end with him, like, yes, I am reciting the rhyme, I am acknowledging this part of my heritage, I am maybe not swearing fealty to Bo-Katan, but a lot more loyalty maybe than he had to her. Which just so good for me. So good for me. The Res Ulnare are my jam, and it's not really something that you see a lot in fic, and it's not something we've seen yet on The Mandalorian either, because, like, okay, the reader's notes for this is not the place to get into my slightly conflicted feelings about The Mandalorian, because on the one hand, yay, and on the other hand, oh, you're making me a little grumpy. But I live in hope that that's something that we will see in our new version, because it's not, it's like Karen Travis era of Mando canon and not Clone Wars or new Disney canon. Anyway, the Res Ulnare, it was so good for me. Countess of Biscuit, I owe you my heart. There were just so many moments in this story that got to me in a way that I wasn't expecting, and then they just stabbed me in the heart, and I don't know. Oh, the throwaway line about Bo-Katan. Bo-Katan thinking about wearing Boba's helmet while she masturbates. Says something about the Mandos. Says something about me. Hot damn. Moving on. I don't know if I'm going to leave that in there, but it was just a lot. That moment was really good for me. I really loved, when I was reading this, the very fluid switch between Basic and Mandoa. I loved it a little less when I was reading it aloud, because I don't know that all of my pronunciation is quite accurate, but anything that sounds wrong, we're going to call it regional dialect, because Bo grew up on Kalevala and not on Mandalore proper. And also because it's a fucking big empire and there's going to be regional accents all over the place. That's it. We're calling it regional accent and not, I don't remember what letters sound like. But I thought it was so great because it wasn't really just throwaway words. It was words that mean things. Like, literally, the title, Sukuigar, means hello, it's a greeting, but it literally means, so you're still alive. Which is the whole premise of this story. He's still alive. It made me so happy. And then there's, like, what is it? Baslan Jevla, which is a callback to something I wasn't expecting in this. The words on their own mean to leave quietly or a quiet departure. But it's also a callback to something from, like, Knights of the Old Republic, the Mandalorian Jedi, like, wars in the, like, 1,000 years before current canon, which was a period when the Mandalorian Empire was kind of at war with the Jedi, and there was a whole thing where some of the Jedi went into hiding, and they called that period Baslan Shevla, which is when they went into hiding to only come back stronger as the true Mandalorians. And also that was, like, one of the things that, like, kept them cohesive while they were in hiding and not actively being visibly Mandalorian, was their practice of the Res El Mare. So it just felt really good to me to have this callback, but also to like acknowledge the sort of EU canon of it all, and also the life cycle of the Mandalorian. I have notes about the things I want to talk about, and I keep getting distracted. One of the things I really loved about this story was the scene where Bo calls some of the clones to come visit Boba. Because, A, these are some of, like, early days batch clones who would have grown up on Kamino with Boba and would have grown up under the tutelage of Jango Fett and, like, Cal Skarada and the first couple batches of clones grew up more, A, like people, and B, like Mandalorians, than the clones who came about after Jango sort of distanced himself from the project, and then especially after Jango died, when the Kaminoans were like, no, we don't want people, we want product. But the earliest, the oldest clones would have had a history with Boba, at least in as far as knowing who he was and knowing sort of a bit, like, they would have had an emotional connection to him. And one of the things I love to see explored is sort of Boba Fett's own reaction to the clones, because he doesn't really acknowledge them as, these are my brothers, the way, like, the clones who become soldiers call each other brother, that we see, say, in Clone Wars. Despite the fact that they are all biologically identical. And that's one of the things that I love to see explored, that Boba Fett considers himself the son of Jango, but he does not consider the clones also the sons of Jango. And it's a real twisted up and sort of self-hurting, and also, like, what is your distinction about what makes someone family and what doesn't? And it's so good to see that, because the clones are, like, they're ready to embrace him and they're ready to give him shit for being the little brother. And he's like, I have been on my own for many years, I am not ready for family reunions like this. And it was just so good for me to see these different levels of it, especially when we start to bring in Fenshisa. Fenshisa, honorable mention. One of the things I love about that guy is how he basically has the identical helmet to Boba Fett, except he also has, like, J-Guys over his T-Visor, to the point where, like, people mix them up in canon. Fenshisa was a Mandalorian who served some time with Jango Fett, or they ran into each other in... Fuck, I'm mixing up my canons. Basically, Fenshisa thought that Jango Fett, who was the last Mandalore under the tradition of the true Mandalorians, which we'll get to that later in my Mando feelings, he had a very particular, very strong reputation as the last true Mandalore. And Shisa Fett thought that the thing that Mandalore needed was a Mandalore of the Fett line. So what does he do? He picks up Spar, who is a clone who ran away from home and doesn't want anything to do with the Grand Army of the Republic. And he's like, hey, nobody knows how many sons Fett had. Put on your acting shoes and we'll let you be Fett's junior. And he props up Spar as Mandalore time to Wikipedia. It starts with an R. Resurgence, Reviver, something. Anyway, so you got that one. And then something happens to Spar and he doesn't want to be the Mandalore anymore. So Fenshisa finds Fi, who has a cameo here in this story. And that made me hearts. And he's like, hey, you're a Fett kid. What Mandalore needs is a Fett Mandalore. And Fi's like, I've just had like a traumatic brain injury. I'm not in the mood to be leading some planets. And then, and basically, Shisa spends a significant portion of his days being like, no, I don't want to be the Mandalore. I want a Fett to be the Mandalore. And then I just love the, like, slightly exaggerated, but also I love the idea that he's just hunting down every possible clone who's still alive. Like, do you want to be Mandalore? You're technically a Fett. Do you want to be Mandalore? And he really wants to build the Fett dynasty of Mandalore. Which I guess brings us to a recap of the political factions of Mandalore. Because that's what you signed up for when you downloaded this podfic. You have the true Mandalorians, who, that's what they call themselves, have a blend of empire building and warrior culture and adherence to the traditionalist ways, and they all kind of get wiped out by Death Watch, who are even more militaristic, expansionist, warrior code. The only people who are worth it are our people. A little bit xenophobic and a lot of bit go boom. And then you have the new Mandalorians, who are Satine Kryze's people, who are the only way Mandalore can prosper in this new version of the galaxy, where we don't really have the might of our multi-planetary empire, is to be pacifist and to show the rest of the Republic that we are worth considering. So you have, like, basically each one of these factions of Mandalorians. It's almost like you've got the Death Watch on the far end, and then you've got the true Mandalorians in the middle, and you have the new Mandalorians on the other end of the spectrum. And each one of them considers themselves the only real Mandalorians, and the other ones are fake. and so you have the true Mandalorians kind of carrying down the title of Mandalore, M-A-N-D-A, apostrophe, Mandalore, not like the head of the Empire, by way of great deeds, and you can challenge a person for the title, and if you win the fight, then you are the Mandalore, or it can be passed down in moments of, like, deathbed confession situation, which is how Jango Fett got the title, because the previous Mandalore gave it to Jango Fett when he was, like, fuck, I don't remember, 15, 16, during shenanigans that happened. And then you have Satine's people, the new Mandalorians, who are following the Royal House of Kryze, or the Ducal House of Kryze, whatever. But they're from Kalevala. They're not actually from Mandalore. So you have another noble family sort of calling claim on the throne. And then you have Death Watch, who are like, fuck this noise. We want to go back to the most extreme version of ourselves. And you have Pre Vizsla, who is claiming to be the ruler by right of I have the dark saber. And Bo-Katan in the Clone Wars, I just poked myself in my own eye from gesticulating. Oh my god, sides with the Death Watch because she thinks her sister Satine's pacifism is not going to stand up well in the face of everything in the long run. And because the new Mandalorians were all pretty much entirely wiped out at the Battle of Geladron, which was actually a trap set by the Death Watch folks to get the Jedi to massacre the true Mandalorians. Anyway, yeah, shit gets weird. Satine is pacifist and Bo-Katan is like, militaristic, let's do this. And so you have Bo-Katan in a weird position by way of she's got the Death Watch backing, and then her sister dies, and she kind of reconsiders her stance on things, and then so she ends up sort of more moderate towards the pacifist end of things, and she has her sister's legacy, so she is able to pull people there. And then in Rebels, spoiler for a thing that happens in Rebels, some of my favorite episodes, Sabine Wren gets her hands on the Darksaber and is like, actually, I'm only like 19 years old. I'm not ready to be a ruler of a multiplanetary anything, especially not in the face of the Empire when I'm still being a rebel and using my exploding face paint. So I'm going to pass this off to someone who can do more with it at this time. And Sabine gives the Darksaber to Bo. So Bo now has, basically, she's got clutch for 2 out of 3 types of Mandalorians, except for the fact that there's now the fucking Saxons on Mandalore proper and Sundari who are siding with the Empire. It's like there's political shenanigans out the wazoo. I love it. And there's not a lot of true Mandalorians left because most of them got wiped out and then sort of sided themselves with either the new or the Death Watch, depending on where their leanings towards Beskar Gemfell. And then you have Boba Fett, who is, legally speaking, the heir of Jango Fett, in that Jango Fett considers Boba his child and doesn't consider the clones his children. Which, again, something to think about. It's not winning all of the Father of the Year awards. But there is a legacy attached to the Fett name, and it's not just Shisa, who wants to see what this guy's gonna do with it. It's not just Shisa who's waiting to see which side of the line he falls down on. So, like, kind of, I'm really into this Bo-Katan, Boba power couple consolidating thing here, because together they bring a lot to the table as far as uniting the various clans and factions in a way that could overthrow the Empire. But then you've got Boba, who's been on his own for the last 20 years, and from what he's been doing, you kind of get the idea that he doesn't want to claim his father's legacy. So the fact that he is willing to recite the Rez Lanare while going down on Bo-Katan means a lot. Anyway, I'm just super here for the political shenanigans of it, and I think it's interesting to see. We're not going to talk about the last 30 seconds of The Mandalorian, because I don't like any of those implications. Bo-Katan has the Darksaber, and she fucking rolls with it. That's what's happening. No fucking moths. Anyway, I have seen your canon and substituted it with my own. But I really loved all these, like, political eddies and machinations going on in the background of all of it. And in the foreground, it's like, no, I'm going to be a decent person and give this guy medical care because he's partially digested. But if it happens to consolidate my power in a way that brings safety and security to my people, Bo-Katan's going to roll with it. And if he happens to be hot, too, and he's pitching a very healthy tent, then that's even better. who is Fen Shusa? I feel like we covered that. Political ramifications of Boba and Bo-Katan. Melding different Mando backstories. Bo and the Darksaber and Sabine. One of the things I really loved about this story, one of the things, there's so many things. So there's that one line about how Bo has picked her heir and she plans on passing the Darksaber down peacefully. Because where the title of Mandalore passed by the true Mandalorians usually involves either somebody dying by battle or, like, somebody losing by battle, the passage of the Darksaber almost always, always, with the exception of when Sabine Wren steps in, ends with the previous owner dying. It's like the Elder Wand of outer space. And the fact that Bo wants to make this a first in the history of the Darksaber, she wants to make it a peaceful transition where she's willingly giving this over to a person that she thinks could lead their people in a, you know, new direction for the future. I think that's incredible, and it makes me so happy. And I'm absolutely going to drop $30 for a plastic laser sword when it comes out next spring. It's going to make different noises when you hit people with it. I'm so excited. Another thing that I thought was genius was, usually I have a very strong aversion to the word fuck in Star Wars because we have sort of the canon approved swear words. But I love what Countess of Biscuit did, where fuck is what adults say and criff is what children say. And then this idea of Boba Fett, who is a, he is a full-ass adult with his own jetpack, and he's basically doing the equivalent of saying peanut butter when he stubs his toe. And sort of what that says about this guy, I loved that. And then Bo sort of laughing at him about it made me full of joy. Just too good for words. The way that the world building of this managed to incorporate so many different aspects of the various canons that I love, and it's not that any one of these are peripheral characters. They are absolutely the main characters of the story, but they are not necessarily the characters who are main characters for other people's stories. I don't know. I just loved seeing the focus of everything going on in the Rebellion era as filtered through the lens of Bo-Katan's history, and it made me so happy inside. And then you get cameos from the Rebels, and you get cameos from Leia, because that's the other thing, the bit about how Leia's going to put Shusa on a leash. When she was hunting the galaxy to find Boba Fett, to find Han in Carbonite, she had a run-in with Shusa, and basically she, like, pins him up against a tree and makes out with him until he gives her answers. It's beautiful. It's a wonderful moment. Leia likes boys in helmets. I'm here for it. Speaking of helmets, this was such a good moment for me because one of the things that's got me a little bit disgruntled with The Mandalorian is this whole Mandalorians can take their helmets off versus Din Djarin's, I will never take my helmet off, that's not allowed. And the throwaway line that in there about, like, she's always curious about the diaspora. I keep saying diaspora. They're not spores. Although I kind of like that idea. They have a round head. They pop up out of nowhere. Like daisies. Anyway. That There's a line about how Boba has been forcibly naked in her presence, and she's hoping one day for him to voluntarily take his helmet off, because it is an emotional connection. It's literally armor against the world. And by putting it back on, basically he's becoming himself again. And also the bit where she's like, I kind of want to masturbate while wearing his face. In a way that's a little bit less creepy than it sounds out loud, because, you know, the Mandos are in their way. But, like, dude, it's like wearing his jacket or something, but better and more intimate and kind of hot, which says something about me. But also about Mandos as a whole. Plus, it gave me an excuse to use sound effects, which is always a fun time in a podfic. Also, oh my god. Okay, can we talk for a second about the fact that basically baby Boba and Jango had the equivalent of Simba and Mufasa's conversation about the stars? The stars are the ancient kings of the past looking down on you, and that's what Kera is. It's the Mandalorian heroes of the past, the Mandalorian leaders of the past looking down on Mandalore. Baby Boba is baby Simba, okay? I'm having a moment here. Yeah, I... And then, like, just sort of going back to Boba's history for a hot second, this story, it's got a genius moment that so fucking heartbreaking. The first war orphan counting out the last, because Boba's the first kid whose dad died for the war, And if you follow this to the extent of episode 6, Luke and Leia are the last orphans, right? With the, well, not, I guess not really, because the Empire is going to continue on being like splinter bits. But like, I love that idea of these sort of encapsulating like the whole of the Clone Wars through the eyes of Boba, especially, and circling back around, when contrasted with the Batch 1 clones, who were raised much more Mandalorianly than, like, later batches of clones, because the earlier batches were raised by Jango Fett and something that got, like, they've adopted the farm, they've adopted the legacy. The clones who aren't automatically aging to death at the end of the war are carrying that on in the way that it's like, oh, yes, we acknowledge her. And then Boba having weird mixed feelings about the clones being his brothers or not. I love it so much. It just, they're making lives for themselves and it makes me happy. And the bit where Bo starts asking Boba about his sigil, his father's crest, and then Boba, like, shuts that shit down, but also kinda admits he doesn't know much by not answering. No one ever talks about his sigil. It's on all the fucking merch. It has fucking layers of meaning with the, you know, the seven and the drops and the slashes and the color work. And it's just like, kind of sadistic, poked it with a stick and I loved it. I love the part, the way that Boba doesn't take Bo-Katan at her word also, because like, it would be foolish to take an enemy at their word. He respects her enough as an adversary that he has to second guess everything. And like, she understands that that's respect, right? He's not gonna just blindly trust her. And I love that so much. Look, she didn't look. She didn't have to. The dark shape in her peripheral answered her curiosity enough. Bo-Katan was peeking like someone in a gym locker room, and I was so here for it. And she's aware she's being ridiculous. And he's pitching a rather large tent. Look, first thing Boba Fett checks after he's been nearly dissolved is whether or not he still has his dick and balls. Boba has his priorities straight. Bo-Katan has them too. And I think it's funny because, you know, Jango Fett has technically literally millions of offspring, and yet Boba is the one that they're setting up to start a dynasty, and I think that's glorious. I just had a lot of emotion about this, and it was an incredible experience to read this and to read it aloud, even though there were a couple places where I was kind of swearing at people's, you know, descendants and mothers and cursing your lineage kind of Zabiska, because there were a couple sentences that were just really hard to get through. Like, just the prose was beautiful but hard to read in one breath. But anyway,
I just, I love it so much. Everything about this just stabbed me in the heart button, and it was so good for me. Thank you, Countess of Biscuit, for writing something so perfectly tailored to me, and I think my reader's notes might actually be longer than the podfic. Anyway, thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed it. Have a nice day.